Hello and welcome. We have a podcast mashup for Season 10, Episode 29. This is Le Crossover Podcast, which was recorded live with a studio audience at UbuCon Europe in Paris on Sunday the 10th of September 2017.
And welcome to the Ubuntu podcast mashup thing from UbuCon Paris. Hello, everyone.
Hello. Hello.
Thousands of
you. Back. Get back, everyone.
There's no room at the back. You'll have to wait outside.
So those are the voices of various people we've got lined up here. There's myself, Alan, and we have Martin.
Hello.
There's Martin. Rudy from Le Ubuntu Podcast.
Bonjour.
Yeah, there we go. Tiago from the podcast Portugal.
Thank you.
And Max and Marius from the Ubuntu Fun Podcast.
Hello. Yeah.
Yay. So we're doing this from France, which is weird because...
Paris,
yes, Paris, France for the Americans. we're at UbuCon Paris, which is one of our regular, irregular, around-the-world trips. This is not the first one of these mashups we've done, but it's the first one with all of us, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's a full lineup this
it's
time,
full
isn't
lineup.
It?
Yeah. There are no other podcasts, are there?
Yeah, these are the, I think these. We have all the podcasts.
All the important ones, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
All the important all the ones.
Yeah. Yes.
Right, okay. Yeah. Okay, so first of all, is it worth... Rudy, do you want to tell people what UbuCon Paris is? Because for the people who aren't here, obviously, they won't know.
Yes, of course. So an UbuCon is... basically an event where we meet each other from the Ubuntu community and everybody that is interested, have interest with Ubuntu and free software. And so we make an event with talk about probably Ubuntu and related topics. Could be Snappy or Flatpak or anything, not spoiling the...
No.
Talk, workshops, and also we have social events where we can eat, drink together. And also we got some mashup thing show.
Awesome. So it's been, well, I thought it was 2 days, but it turns out it's been way longer than 2 days. It feels like I've been here a week.
Well, we've been here 4 days now.
Yeah. Okay, feels like a week.
Yeah.
The rest of you guys, what have you been doing? You've given a presentation about Mate, haven't you?
I have. I did a presentation about Ubuntu Mate 17.10 and a preview of its new features. You and I have done 2 Snapcraft workshops with a classroom of computers and enthusiastic people that want to learn how to snap stuff. And you've done a presentation as well.
Oh, yes, I did. Yes, about Snapcraft. I forgot about that. It was so long ago. I feel like I've been here a week.
Also, which you can also watch on YouTube because it got recorded.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. Also, it's already up there.
Yeah, so. It's already on YouTube.
Yeah.
So if you search for awesome...
awesome
Alan Pope,
Snapcraft,
put it you'll in find it.
Yeah,
right, awesome. Super. So how about you guys? What have you been up to at the event? Attending any super things? What have you been doing?
I was attending 2 that special talks for me. One about BioBoo. So
The terminal thing from Dustin Kirkland.
Because I have tested it in the past, but it was not for me suited for me. But after yesterday's talk, Dustin's, and I said that I must try it again. So it was real.
What was the turning point? Because as far as I'm concerned, it's lots of little stuff down the bottom of the screen that, like, you know, nags me when I need updates and stuff. Like, what's this compelling thing that made you think
split.
It's me? Split screen.
Split screen.
Right.
And it's pre-installed, I guess. Yeah. So that's a feature.
Oh, it's pre-installed, is it?
Yep.
Wow, that's news to me.
Yeah.
And the Slimbooks.
Okay. Oh, and the people from Slimbook are here, right?
Yes.
So is this you're going to spend all your money on a new laptop now?
I'm thinking about it. I love my ThinkPad, but I'm really thinking about it.
They are quite pretty, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I don't need another laptop, but I want one now. I've seen what they have.
Real nice.
Given
laptop.
I have one of your laptops, and Mark has one of your laptops, you're right, you don't need any more laptops.
All but my laptops are out on loan at the moment. Like laptop lending library.
Oh, God. Can I borrow another laptop, Mark?
Yeah, okay. Not a slim book, though, if I can. Okay.
It can never be too much laptops.
So, Max, what have you been up to this weekend?
Yeah, I did a talk also. About 6 ways to free your Android phone. It was pretty long. It was at the end of the day, and everyone was pretty tired, I guess. But I did it, and it was my first talk. It was totally amazing.
It was.
Yeah,
I learned stuff.
Yeah,
very interesting. Yeah,
and really stressful. But I can only recommend doing talks. It cools you down and makes you more self-confident in doing talks again.
There seems to be a theme in your talk of like having software freedom on your Android device, and a lot of the things were don't do this, you can't do this,
Yeah. This
is broken, if you do this, all the rest of the stuff won't work.
Yeah.
It seemed like you were selling it really, really well,
Yeah. But
it really felt like this stuff is all just a hot mess.
It is. And
right.
That's pretty much the point. So most of the Android freedom dimensions are not really reachable to normal users at the moment, and we're thinking about patching it into some crazy tool called the Magic Device Tool. Maybe someday soon.
Yeah. Magic Goober Tool.
Yeah, Goober Tool. Yeah.
We have to decide for a new name for this week.
The Mushroom Tool. Right, maybe someday it'll be easier to get some cool free stuff on your Android phones. In a free SM, in a speech,
and
beer, and everything else.
So, Marius has been waving around a lovely silver slab the whole weekend, and pretty much wherever he gets it out, misses, everyone wants to have a touch of it. What is your silver slab, Marius?
There we go again. That's a GPD Pocket, which was just recently successfully founded on Kickstarter, I think it was, which is capable of, it's like a 7-inch, very small computer, which is capable of running Ubuntu. And there's other Linux distros, and I think we will go into kind of my first impressions about that a bit later during the show. Okay. But basically, everyone who has seen it so far has ripped it out of my hand and tried to. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like
and for the benefit of the listeners, Tiago is in fact immediately grabbed it as soon as it was waved around.
So we can test this if I just turn it around and show it to the audience. We'll see what the reaction is when I show it to the audience. See, we're not kidding. It's absolutely a gorgeous device. Yeah, we'll talk more about that a little bit later.
Yeah.
So I guess we should move on to something to talk about that's interesting. Some news?
Yeah.
What's in the news, Marius? So, you seem to have your finger on the pulse over there.
Yeah.
When I say pulse, I mean laptop.
I actually do, but I'm not sure if I'm actually prepared to talk about that one, because the Ubuntu 17.10 Beta 1 apparently is out now.
I think we know someone who might know about this.
Yeah, that's
Martin, do you know someone who might know about this?
As volunteer release manager for 17.10 Beta 1, I do know a thing or two about this, yes. So last Thursday, or the week before that, the time is a mystery now, all of the flavors had their Beta 1 release. So this was everyone except for Ubuntu proper had their 17.10 betas. So
why does Ubuntu proper not participate in betas? Like this, like whenever you see news articles, like the news article here says Ubuntu 17.10 Artful Art of Arc Beta 1. And so people might be thinking, oh, Ubuntu with the new GNOME shell stuff, that's hit Beta 1, and you're there saying, no, it isn't.
No, it hasn't.
Why?
I suppose it's a policy decision from the Ubuntu desktop team or whoever that they are just doing final betas.
Okay.
I think their rationale is they have full-time QA, and they're testing the daily images at intervals throughout the cycle, so they don't need these landmarks.
Do everyone put down their tools and stop for a week?
The smaller teams, we do need these landmark days where it's like, here's an image, please come and test it and provide your feedback. And certainly for Ubuntu Mate, that was extremely useful in Alpha 2. There was a load of new features. Had a feeling they broadly worked, but we had great feedback about where things were broken, and we were really able to refine that for Beta 1. So I find those landmark releases really useful for the smaller projects.
Cool.
Yeah. What about the other flavors?
Well, so Zubuntu, we've got their new flavor. I'm not close to the Zubuntu team, but I know they've revved a number of their
technologies. I know it's very difficult for you to talk about anything other than Ubuntu Mate.
It's fine. But they're moving more and more towards GTK3 across their graphical stack now. Lubuntu is probably the most, I've been saying this for a number of years, but they're actually doing it now, or rather Simon Quigley is doing it now. And there's an image called Lubuntu Next, and that has LXQt as the desktop in it. And that's looking very interesting.
It's been promised for years now. Really? I guess I was expecting it for 14 or 4.
I think 14.10 was the first time I was aware it might happen.
Yeah.
It is happening for 17.
I think it's traditional in the Ubuntu project to promise things and then maybe deliver them, maybe not, sometime later. So I think they're just following in our footsteps, really.
Ubuntu Budgie have updated to all of the latest Budgie desktop stuff. So there's a lot of really nice usability improvements in Ubuntu Budgie now.
Yeah, Budgie's quite pretty, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
You use Solus, don't you? So Budgie Marius is...
Right,
so Ubuntu Budgie is the upstream and Solus is like the clone.
So
what is it about the Budgie desktop? Do you use the Budgie desktop?
I'm using the Budgie desktop.
What is it about it you really like?
Sorry?
What is it about the Budgie desktop that you like over other desktops?
Because it's still somehow GNOME and it's also fast.
Right, so speed is a thing.
Yeah, actually.
And it's not like you're running it on low-end hardware. That looks quite pokey laptop.
But I've been running GNOME Shell on that one before, and it's just another level of speed on that. With the performance, it's really great. I also like Solus and the rolling release stuff, so...
So it's more of a Solus thing, not a Budgie decision.
Well, Solus itself is great, but Budgie is an additional bonus. Yeah.
Okay. So would you be willing to try Ubuntu Budgie on some?
I'd have to say this, otherwise IQ will kill me. The implementation of Budgie in Ubuntu Budgie, I've heard, is maybe not as not as great as in Solus.
It's very diplomatic of you, Marius. what's wrong? Is it like not integrated well? Is it not?
I honestly don't know. I've just heard the performance on Ubuntu Budgie isn't as fast as on Solus.
Okay. So they need to do some work there.
Yeah,
but I guess your source is also a bit compromised.
Maybe you have to pull out from Aikidorf.
So Thiago and Rudy, this one for you. Like when the betas come around, do you find like your community are keen on trying out the betas, or do people seem to like hang around for the final release? What do you think?
I'd say like half of the people just stick to the LTS because they like stability and not having headaches about bugs and stuff.
Right.
There are like part of the rest of the people, they stick like the non-LTS, and there are like crazy people that go for the alphas and the betas for every day. I'm one of those.
Right.
When like 1 month before the final release, I usually do the upgrade on my daily, on my every day.
Wow.
And it's like sometimes it's good, sometimes it's a real pain.
Right.
Okay. So sometimes I get to work and my laptop don't work properly.
And do you run it in Portuguese or in English?
Portuguese, because in my work I have to explain Ubuntu to people, and I have to do it in Portuguese because it's two barriers, is like the software and the language. So I started using things in Portuguese, and I'm a translator also, so I must use it in Portuguese so that I see.
That was going to be my next question, actually. How good is the translation? Do you get like English words popping up in places is that your responsibility if it does? Like, it's your fault.
Sometimes it's my fault. It's our fault. Okay?
Of course,
it's a community.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, right.
Fault,
we have like several problems because we have one problem. It's like we're a small country with small people. Small people with less people. We also have small people. But it's like
you brought one along to show the audience.
Yes. But we are regular, taller.
Right.
But there are not much people translating. Mm-hmm. So this is a problem. Then we have another problem that lots of people in Portugal, I think it's everywhere, but in Portugal, people that don't write and speak nice Portuguese. So we have like some things in English, some bad words said, and some we have like an additional, because we are transitioning from some words we have like a big happening. It's like several of our Portuguese words are changing the way they are written. And some people agree with it, some people don't.
Right,
and
that sounds like a recipe for success.
Yeah. It's hard to manage.
Right, wow. Okay.
It's doing nice.
Awesome. Awesome.
Great.
It's all okay.
Awesome. What about in the French community? Are they involved in beta testing and translation stuff actively, do you think?
So, well, our local team is mostly oriented to advocating Ubuntu and free software. And we are losing more and more techies people in our local team because we don't need techies people to explain, to promote Ubuntu. And, well, when we do install party, we used to install the last version of Ubuntu. And since a few years, we learned that it was a better idea to install LTS on the people PC. So they don't come back it's not working. 3 months later, tell me there is an update I don't know if I should click yes or no.
So you run these install parties where people come along and they bring their own machine, their own laptop or desktop, and you help them through the install process.
Yeah, well, we help them. Well, it's more...
You give them a USB stick and walk away.
It's more like a mind help than a true technician help, because we just sit down close to them. We want them to hold the mouse. We don't do terminal stuff. We just say, well, I think we have to click on the next button.
Right.
It's most mine was. Yeah, we are mostly guiding them. And if ever there is our issue, well, we do whatever we need to do. But it's mostly helping to make people not fear about a new thing, you know?
Right, not scared about the clicking the button.
Yeah.
And,
next, right. What will happen next?
Awesome. So I think that's everything about 70. Are there any other things we should know about Beta 1?
Oh, obviously, Kubuntu had their new version. They've got new versions of Plasma, and Ubuntu Studio did Beta 1 as well, the biggest ISO of the lot. That's a 4 gig.
Why has it got like giant 4K wallpapers in it?
It has all of the audio and video production tools and graphical production tools. Everything imaginable is in there, including sophisticated stuff for hooking up jack and all sorts of stuff. So I installed that to do some smoke testing, and I found a couple of really interesting like audio and video production tools I had no idea about, so they'll be turning up in the Ubuntu Mate boutique.
Don't they also include the low latency kernel for some audio
stuff? I didn't notice that.
Yeah, because that's the reason they are doing a spin on some of the flavors.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting beta.
So, a few weeks from now, it'll be final beta, and that's when you can get the proper Ubuntu with the first outing of GNOME Shell and all of those tweaks and everything. Yeah, yeah.
Sweet. Any other things we should mention about the Beta 1? I think probably covered that topic enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. The next thing on the list says, insert news about Ubuntu Mate here. Is this your fault? Did you do this?
I saw those words and I just put the link to the release announcement in there.
Okay.
If you give me an opportunity, I will shill.
Yeah, we've had enough so far. So one of the next things on the list I think we have here is a SnapD roadmap.
Yeah.
Wow. What's all that about?
It's a roadmap posted a few days ago on the Ubuntu Insights blog. Mm-hmm. And it's, with this nice little checkboxes to explain what's going on and which features are missing for the next SnapD version. And I wanted to inquire because there's has been another blog post since then that mentioned that there was a PolicyKit update on the SnapD side, and since then you don't have to log in to install snaps anymore from the Ubuntu software store.
So explain that problem, because I know a few people have complained about that.
If you're using snap on the command line, you can just install whatever you want and it just works. When you're trying it in the integrated graphical way with the Ubuntu software application, then you are searching for the snap and you are clicking install, and it asks you to log into your Ubuntu One account. And I think this is what they're trying to fix, and I've also got an update for that, but it didn't really work just yet, so I'm guessing they're still working on it.
and it should be in the next major version.
So is the complaint, why am I having this logon box? Yeah, I shouldn't exactly. have to have that.
Why I just want I have to install to log some on software. To just install a free open source snap thing.
Right, okay.
Which I don't have to do in the terminal.
Right, okay. And so you're saying that's fixed, it's coming, it's going to be, so you don't have to log in? Or?
Yeah, exactly. So the policy kit update said that you shouldn't have to log in any longer. You can just use your local account, like your super user.
Elevated permissions.
Exactly.
Oh, so it will prompt you just for, like you would get a pseudo pop-up thing
probably,
when you install.
Because I expected it, but it didn't really work when I tested it, so I guess they're still working on it a bit. But the SnapD roadmap also talked about it, and it wasn't updated on this blog, so I guess it's not really declared stable yet.
So the fact that you've tested that and it didn't work as you'd hoped, what I would encourage you to do is go to forum.snapcraft.io and post about your experiences there, because all of the Snapcraft team are active in that forum.
So the forum is like the way to go?
This is direct route to the developers to share your experiences. And if it's a bug, then we'll get a bug raised and somebody will look at it. Or maybe it's only partly implemented and there's something else that's going to come along. But you'll get an answer as to what the status is.
But I'm really looking forward to this feature because I think it has been an interesting complaint for the last couple of months, because mm-hmm. many people said, with Flatpak, I don't have to do that. And it's kind of spooky because, why should I log in just to download my normal software?
So I think the other side of the argument is there is a good reason for that. Like in the future, there will be paid apps, and
exactly.
if you sign into your Ubuntu SSO account, then you would probably be able to restore your purchases. So if you've got a laptop and a desktop, it might be that you buy an app on your desktop and install it, and then on your laptop you want to restore that purchase, much like you do on Android and iOS. I think they're trying to mimic that functionality, and on those platforms. You do have to sign into the Google Play Store, and I think some people are resistant to that whole, why am I giving my credentials to something when all I want to do is download a piece of software?
Yeah, because people are used to it from apt. Because
the archive is just a big just web directory.
Yeah, sure. Without any authentication.
So it seems like they've listened to that feedback, despite it taking a few months, but they've listened to that.
But it's a nice feature, and I think it's upcoming.
If it
has been implemented while we're talking.
Is there anything else in that roadmap that's interesting?
There is for me. I noticed...
Does it mention Marte?
As it happens, no.
Oh, okay. I'll allow it then.
It's the XDG Open integration that's now embedded in SnapD itself.
For humans, what does that mean?
Yeah, so if you install a graphical application of a snap that has like a URL inside and you click the URL, it's the mechanism by which it hands that off to like your local browser to open that URL in a browser. And that required a little shim that you had to install in addition to SnapD and all the rest of it. And that worked on Ubuntu and I think on Debian, but none of the other distros had it. So now that shim has been embedded in SnapD itself.
Right.
So now you don't need this auxiliary piece of software. It's all self-contained in.
So previously you'd like... see a piece of software in the Ubuntu Software Center, and you go, that looks cool, click, and you might have to log in or might not. And then you install it, and then if it's an email client, you get an email and you click a link in an email, and then that link is just dead. Is that you can't actually, and it feels like the application is broken.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And so it fixes that problem.
It fixes that, yeah.
And that's actually surprisingly common. People put links in their apps all
About
over the place.
Box, link to the homepage of the application. Emails have links to websites. You know, code editors even will highlight URLs and things in comments and what have you. So, yeah.
Sweet. Well, that's good to hear that they're fixing that as well. Is that landed already or coming?
It's coming in the next version in 2.28.
Of SnapD.
Of SnapD.
Users won't have to do anything, will they? Because just auto-updates.
It will just land.
It will just refresh and you're done.
Yeah.
And it will just magically work.
Yeah.
And pixies will dance across your screen and everything is
Unicorns
happy.
Unicorns will vomit rainbows, that whole thing. Yeah.
Sweet. I love that kind of stuff. So I think that's everything from that SnapD roadmap thing. It then says next in the rundown, it says Flatpaks?
What are these Flatpaks you mention?
I don't know.
I don't know.
So, next up,
Well, let's have a look at, well, we'll continue on from that subject of snaps, actually, because, jumping over Flatpaks, there's a mention of a couple of specific snaps that you guys have been trying out, and you've got some feedback for us on those.
Yeah, indeed, because maybe some people have noticed, there's a new Chromium snap in the Snap Store. It's also pushed to stable right now. And it's pretty interesting because it's the first time that somebody, I think, has tried to snap a browser, which is like the most complicated application one could imagine, I guess. It's it has to have access to everything, and it's have to and hardware acceleration and stuff, and it's really complicated in its implementation. And Chromium Snap is downloadable right now, and Marius tried it.
Yeah, but I've tried it on Solos, and the hardware acceleration wasn't working there.
Yeah. So so you could just go Snap install Chromium, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then it appears in your menu, and you try it out. And what did or didn't work?
I guess...
You open a web page in Chromium, exactly. The basics of a browser?
You could do your basic browser thing.
Right.
It did work, and also video playback and all the stuff worked. And if you check the GPU acceleration page for Chromium, it seemed to fill out all the checkboxes just right. So on Ubuntu, I guess that works pretty much. But what didn't work was the .desktop file, so it didn't show the little Chromium icon yet. I don't know why, but I guess that'll be fixed soon.
I think it will be fixed sooner if you report a bug.
Yeah.
To be fair,
forum.snapcraft.io is also another good place to.
Can we get an audio clip of Martin saying forum.snapcraft.io? So every time you mention problems, we just like insert.
I can get one of those little clippers. Yeah. We can just.
Yeah. But I was surprised that it worked that well yet. So pretty great stuff, and I guess. What really annoyed me was the fact that 1 year ago, probably around the time Snapd was becoming like a real thing for desktop users, Firefox promised to get on it as well, and this was this great press release that they said, yeah, we're going to support snaps in the future. Coming in the next.
So you tried the Firefox snap, did you?
Yeah.
It doesn't exist
tried
yet.
Firefox snap in a way that it doesn't exist yet.
Right.
And
okay.
There has been no communication since then at all. Pretty. Yeah, I guess sad because Firefox is the pre-installed browser still, and probably will be.
So I have a thought on this.
Soon. Yeah.
One of the problems with snaps, in my mind, is that it comes from Canonical, so it originates and is a first-class citizen on Ubuntu. If any software developer out there is distributing software for Linux, they generally target Ubuntu. Like, whether that's good or bad, and if you're not using Ubuntu, that will be frustrating for you, right? But it means that any software vendor that's created software already has already gone through the pain of creating devs for Ubuntu, or created a PPA, or they have their own repo. So it's difficult to convince someone that they should now create a snap as well.
Yeah.
Whereas if you are targeting like Fedora or some other distro, they don't already have this vast library of people who would, make it very easy for software to be installed on those systems. So there is a motivation to create Flatpaks for those, because currently the software like ecosystem is quite small.
Yeah.
So I think it's actually we're Flatpaks have an advantage in some ways because there is a lack of software on those platforms, so where Flatpak is a number one citizen, if you see what I mean. Whereas on Ubuntu, we kind of already have this giant library, so trying to convince someone like Mozilla to make a snap actually a little bit harder.
What's annoying is that the fact that they promised it. So I guess they
even
came out.
Put a date on that. They said like
Well, they're following our lead of promising things a couple of years ago, and then everyone's doing it now.
And they did it again.
Right.
Yeah. And to be honest, the Chromium Snap isn't by the Chromium developers, it's by the maintainers for the Ubuntu package.
Yeah.
So I guess it's in-house development again. Mm-hmm. And not the target with Snap is the real developers behind the project are picking it up, not the maintainers for Ubuntu.
So there's a policy decision from the Chromium team that they don't package software.
Yeah.
So we have approached them, and they've said, no, it's down to the distribution maintainers to create snaps or debs or RPMs or PKG builds or whatever of Chromium.
So that's the reason why.
That's the reason why.
And in your introduction, you said this is the first time there's been a browser as a snap.
That's...
And I could feel the heat rising next to me. Because, Martin, that's not true, is it?
No, the first snap in the store, first browser snap in the store was Brave, and I've been working with the guys at Brave to snap Brave. And yes, it is a real browser. It's,
dude, it's my default browser. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Brave is just awesome. Everyone should switch to Brave now. Yeah. It's brilliant.
And you're quite right. Snapping a browser is difficult because of all of the reasons you listed. But and they're in the process of adopting that snap, so... we've been helping them with that, and it's in process of being adopted
by
Brave.
Are there pieces missing still for implementing browsers correctly? I mean, like file menus or something that it's really done already.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, there's a special interface in SnapD called Browser Support, which is specific.
It should be called just Make Browsers Work.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. But it handles really sophisticated things like the complex sandboxing that exists in things like Chromium and Brave and things like that. And now the new Firefox 55 onwards also utilizes many of those new C group primitives.
Yeah, because they're using I think it's Electrolysis, their new browser separation technique.
So, like, I know, like, everyone has their passion for which, you know, browser they tend to prefer, and, you know, Martin and I like Brave. Like, I have a feeling that Firefox is popular in the French community for some. Is that true? It's not. Chromium isn't as big a player over here. Is that a privacy, a freedom thing, or what?
Yeah,
do you think?
I think most people I know are using Firefox, and some techies people I know that are not really aware of free software are using Google Chrome.
Right. So it's pretty much the same as everywhere else. If you're a freedom lover, you use Firefox. If not, and you want video playback and stuff, you might use Chrome.
Well, everything working except Google Hangout and my Firefox.
Right.
And I'm not using it. And when I have to do it, I just launch Chromium. So.
Right. Cool.
I'm using Brave.
Are you?
Oh, yeah.
See, right. You could join our club.
Yeah. Okay.
Brilliant.
It's not my main browser because it misses a plugin for my passwords.
Right.
Because it only supports LastPass and one other two or three services.
Yeah.
I use Nextcloud for passwords, so I'm really hoping that Passman, it's already a feature request, but it's not yet implemented.
Right.
But I have all my passwords on Firefox because nice plugins, but I'm soon going to change to...
So I've started using Brave for all of my personal browsing. For work, I use Google Chrome, but for anything that's my own stuff, I use Brave.
That's interesting. I mean, 50% of us are using Brave.
Yeah, and I've switched to Brave on Android as well.
Yeah,
I've made it my default browser.
I was going to say, my only browser on my mobile devices is Brave.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's fantastic.
Didn't expect that. Okay.
Ah, there you go.
And what about you two? What are you using?
Well, at least I have it installed, apparently, on this machine. I think I've launched it like twice, just to test the SnapD implementation when it just came out in Solus. And... yeah, but my main browser is still Google Chrome.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. Firefox.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What about Raspberry Pi? Is it going to be available?
What's that, Brave?
Yeah.
Technically, it could be available. I can discuss it with them.
Okay. I use a Raspberry Pi to record the Portuguese Ubuntu podcast, and I need Brave there.
Well, I'll mention it to them.
Thank you.
Yeah.
They are. It's all on GitHub, isn't it?
Yeah, they are.
So you could file an issue on GitHub, and
not on this occasion.
It would be possible to have an ARM build because if they hook it all up to build.snapcraft.io, we could build ARM versions.
Yeah. In fact, we may already be building ARM versions.
Yeah, but
it does by default.
They're not correct. They're not architecture correct at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So moving on from all of that. Marius, as we mentioned earlier, got a new toy that he's been sharing his shiny around. Tell us about this new toy, Marius.
Yeah. Just to read some specs, as I said, it's a 7-inch touchscreen display, and there's an Intel Atom X7 in it with 4 cores, and actually it's not passive cooled, it has a fan in it, so it's not getting too hot while working with it. Also, it has 8 gigs of RAM, which is quite nice, because most of these smaller devices are maybe 2 to 4 gigs of RAM, which is, I think, in my browser session current, or in my system session right now, one tab of Firefox and Google Chrome. So 8 gigs of RAM is nice on that. It also has an eMMC drive in it for with 128 gigs. That's it. And yeah, it's all USB Type-C, and it also has a USB Type-A port on it. It can charge it via USB-C, so it's kind of nice to have as a gadget.
So this thing is basically a small PC. It's
basically just a small laptop, yeah.
A small PC. It's about PC. A quarter of the size of your ThinkPad, by the look of it, but twice the
could
depth.
Be, yeah.
For people our age, it's the size of a VHS cassette.
I think that's more of a Betamax.
Actually, you're probably right. It's more Betamax
VHS. Size, yeah, yeah. And where'd you get it? Did you just like go into Amazon and buy it, or what?
Not quite. I've bought it on Dragonbox. That's the German reseller for DPD.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't do the crowdfunding.
I didn't back it.
So this was a Kickstarter-y thing.
It was a Kickstarter at first, and then it actually shipped, and then it was available for resellers.
Wow.
And I bought it at my local store.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I backed it. So I also recently got mine.
Is this why you got a terribly broken one?
This could be why. So yours, I've compared with Marius's, and it works very well. But mine, the keyboard is, well, frankly, terrible.
It's like you spilt coffee on it.
Yeah, it's like they're sticky and clicky and catchy, and they don't strike evenly. You can't type reliably.
It's infuriating to type on.
Yeah, it is. And I've had a type on Marius's, and they're all uniform tactile response. There's no clicking or catching, so maybe I got a bad one.
Maybe.
I don't know.
What's the use case for this thing? I mean,
I get to that in a second. I was actually add something to the keyboard topic. Besides that, it's the layout is, I think, US international, so there are like...
It's not really like a standard like layout.
Not
the
all,
keys
actually,
are
no.
all over the place.
Yeah.
So it's got two space bars.
Well, yeah, because they're split, because there's a checkpoint in between. But
right.
That's actually the reason why I bought it. No, but the thing is... So. The thing is, if you manage to get used to the weird keyboard layout, right. Which I still not 100% have achieved yet, there's also another issue because the media keys and the number keys are very small. They're not even combined the size of the usual key. I will share the route later so you can take a look, and it's really hard to type on that one. And,
does it even have function keys?
It has a function key, and it does.
But, but the function keys are even smaller, so I guess.
And it's a touchscreen as well.
Yeah, it also has a working touchscreen. Yeah.
But so it's quite a, I mean, it's a sexy device.
Yeah.
It's quite cool. They've had to make some compromises for the space.
But also, if you hold it like in two hands and kind of try to show it for the audience, you can just type in with your two thumbs. You can always reach everything.
Yeah, actually, when you showed me that the other day, I was like, yes, that's actually a better way of using that device.
So it was like updating it. I was like updating my GPD Pocket on my way to the bus while I was walking, which was quite interesting and dangerous, actually. But
for those people who are listening, that would be like holding a big tablet and using an on-screen keyboard with your thumbs, like one hand on each side, right?
Yeah, but I guess the keys are even smaller because if you have big fingers.
Yeah, but at least you can reach all of them.
So going back to my question, what is the actual use case for this thing? I mean, it looks cool, and walking down the street, updating it, you are
in cool for some people,
But go for it. Well, Rudy, what do you
did
think?
Did you attempt to the Dustin Kirkland talk about Biogu?
No.
At the end, he has a little lines for another project he did with using Biogu, by the way, which is called Hollywood. Maybe you can walk in the street with Hollywood, which is basically a program that fake...
To make it look even more cooler.
Make you look like a hacker.
Exactly, basically. Like in the movie, you know, that he makes a boy using the keyboard.
You would need a balaclava on. And a hoodie.
And sunglasses.
And sunglasses.
An anonymous mask, maybe.
That would fit,
But you can
if you see a man walking through Germany like this, it's
probably me.
I do have a use case for it, and that's that when I travel to friends and family at the weekend, I like to take some computer equipment with me in case I need to do stuff. And I can secrete that about my person without having to take my backpack full of gear with me. So
I feel bad enough that I sit there and the kids are playing and I pull out my phone and I type something in a work IRC client or something like that. But to just like pull out an entire computer out of your pocket and be like, hang on, kids.
Well, sometimes you get asked questions and you need to look up the answers, you know.
And your phone is unavailable.
Yeah,
there's definitely one use case. I've actually been doing that, I think it was yesterday night, and at a bar that we went to, and to the pub. So it's not as weird as if you were to just rip out your laptop and put it on the table besides the food.
There's no escaping the fact that using an actual computer with a keyboard is often easier to do certain things. Like, for example, we were going to check in our flights today, yeah. And then we needed to get our passport numbers and all the rest of it. And typing all of that stuff into your phone is a pain. Using an actual computer is much, much faster to just get that task done. So having a mini computer to just do those kinds of things quickly
given how is bad, more convenient. Given how bad the keyboard is on your GPD, I would love to I was sitting next to each other, me checking in on my phone and you using that, like, keyboard.
Disappointing. Nature of the keyboard on my GPD does kind of nuke from orbit its intended purpose.
Right.
That said, I'm also backing the Gemini PDA, which is coming along November, December time this year.
You have a problem. You really do.
Next time you need a laptop, my friend.
There is that. Yeah, sorry. It's a problem that I'm taking full advantage of, that's for sure. So what about the performance of this thing?
Just want to add for that first, it's still a nice gadget if you need proper Ubuntu on the go and stuff, for stuff like that, if you can carry around your laptop, but it's still €599, so yeah, it's really expensive.
Is it even proper Ubuntu? I mean, because they don't have the kernel patches to support SnapD, for example.
Well, that's because and that's kind of brings us back to the performance thing. the Ubuntu spin that GPD provided when they shipped the devices basically sucks, because almost nothing is working on that, even not the touch input and the screen orientation. Yeah. And I could go into what isn't working for like an hour, but I will skip to the part where there's actually a community member who's called, I think, Nexus 511, who made a community respin of Ubuntu for the GPD Pockets especially, with all the kernel stuff fixes and nice pre-configured stuff and a few other nice things and fan control, because on the GPD ISO, the official GPD ISO, the fan control and the sensor for the fan is on the same board. And sometimes the fan isn't working, and that also means that the sensor isn't working, so it doesn't even know that it's about to melt. that's definitely something you want to get fixed, and he did that, and he's working on some of the other stuff too, and SnapD isn't working yet, because there's no armor yet in the kernel and stuff, but he's fixing that. I've talked to him.
Well, on that front, he may not need to, because in Ubuntu 17.10, the 4.13 kernel will be released for 17.10, and that includes most of the important kernel enablement for the GPD Pocket. So these respins that exist that replace the kernel with a mainline kernel with the GPD patches shouldn't be required anymore, and these tweak scripts that are being published will just be things like the X and screen rotation fixes and sensors and things. It won't. So I think that will improve soon. Yeah.
So looking forward to try that. Yeah.
Are we done with the GPD? What's your overall opinion? Would you buy one again if if it all worked and the software, like, ignore all the software stuff, that could be fixed? Like, would you buy one?
I think so, yeah, because I like nice little gadgets who are capable of running Linux. So anyway, but I've also bought it to review it properly. So
you had a question, Rudy?
Yes, but when you use it, except if you have a terminal needs, if you what's the default desktop? What is the default desktop installed?
The default desktop is Windows on
well, it gets shipped with Windows, but the Ubuntu spins that are out there are with Unity.
So when I
crowdfunded it, I got ordered the version which came with Ubuntu, and it was Ubuntu 16.04 with Unity.
Yeah.
This guy that's making these spins, I think he's made Stock Ubuntu and Lubuntu and Zubuntu.
And he recently started creating Ubuntu GNOME images, yeah.
Right.
So my point is, except if you only have terminals needs, you know, do you think it will worth it to have something like Unit, the fork of Unity 8 on it? Because there is a touchscreen, you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, let alone if I personally like and would use it. But there's actually on the community respin, there's also the because it's 17.04, there's also the switch in LightDM for Unity 8. And that's actually working. I was really surprised after sitting like there for 10 minutes with a black screen. as expected mostly. But after that, it just started working. The screen orientation has still to get fixed manually, but technically, yeah, Unity 8 is working on that. Mm. And supposedly the community spins too, yeah.
except if you want to open terminal in Unity 8.
Awesome. So are we done with the GPD pocket?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sweet. What's next?
Well, there has been a new browser market share thing published, the net market share review thing, and it's the first time, I guess, that it's been over 3% for the Linux desktop.
Yeah, 3%. Yeah.
Mission accomplished.
Next year, 99%, right? We're really like powering on through. It's been 1% forever.
You have to admit that it has been 2.53 a month prior. I mean, that's quite an improvement in my opinion.
That's, yeah. Yeah. Well, do they break it down? Did everyone
go on holiday to Linux land or something? In August.
Everyone got birthday presents of Chromebooks, maybe. I don't know.
Chromebooks are separated out from
Okay, this. So this is genuine, genuine Linux desktop.
But this is what we recognize as desktop Linux, not other devices that happen to use a Linux kernel.
Right. Yeah. So you're saying
it's just a browser market share in the desktop space. So it's just a comparison between Linux, macOS, and Windows.
Do they break it down by region? Is it like one particular country has suddenly deployed 1,000 million?
That would be really
that would be interesting.
To know,
yeah, maybe. Yeah. But I guess they have to publish more detailed results.
We did make quite a song and dance about the Alpha 2 for 1710 for Ubuntu Mate. It could just be
maybe.
That.
Yeah, just the Mate.
Dream on.
Maybe. So I just wanted to mention it because
this is super news. This is
year of the Linux desktop again. So
oh, it's the year of the Linux desktop.
Yeah, didn't you notice?
No,
no.
I was not aware of that. Okay, well that's good news. Do you have any thoughts on whether this is indicative of what you're seeing where you live? Do you see more people having Linux machines, or is this just like
Everywhere? But we talked about it in our last show in Portugal, and I personally prefer the Pornhub numbers.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Wasn't that 7%?
Eight.
Right.
Sorry. So this is a niche website, shall we say?
Niche interest website.
Niche.
It's a global
niche
special interest group.
Special interest website, which is
more positive numbers.
Right. Yeah. But the visitors who go to that site, seriously, the visitors who go to that site,
don't
are
everyone go there?
Yeah, everyone goes there. It's not like it's
first Google, then Pornhub.
Right. Yeah. I don't know what to think about that. I really don't.
But I gotta respect the numbers.
It's not like we've told people don't go to that niche website on your Windows machine because it's all dodgy. You should use your Linux machine. What if all the Linux users are only using it for that?
They're all live USB sticks.
Yeah. So they're getting a disproportionate idea of how many Linux users there are. Nobody uses Windows on our site. Yeah, because all your dodgy adverts.
That's where the NSA narrative comes in, because I guess over the years people have noticed, this NSA thing, and I'm scared. And don't want to. They should know that I'm watching porn or something. And so they are all installing VirtualBox and go visit porn.
It'd be lovely if we could lobby some other interesting niche websites to get them to release data about their browser. Yeah, like Humble Bundle will be tricky because some of them are very specifically Linux and some are very definitely Windows. But some
Humble Bundle are already doing this.
Yeah, I mean,
they show browser stats for who buys it. Yeah. But I'm just thinking of like visitors to something that everybody goes to. Like if the BBC did it, or Google homepage would be right. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's something we can go away as homework to do, is start lobbying people to like
produce properties to capture this
and lobby people who work at those places to try and work internally to publish that stuff, because it will either
it
confirm
any competitive advantage to anybody surely,
but it might either confirm the niche website one or this net one that's 3%, like
I'm quite sure that the 3% don't really mean that much, because it's just one study, one browser market share thing, and about I guess, three bigger major ones that are not showing 3%. The other one is like about 2%, and the other one is below 1%. So I guess it all comes down to how you measure it and which sites are linked into their measurement tools.
Yeah.
So I guess in average it should be around, as always, about 1 or 2%.
I think we could have some statistic by niche if we have some stat published by Reddit, by subreddit. Maybe could give a nice idea.
Do they give you stats on subreddit admins?
I think they don't, but if they publish it, we could have...
I think one of the tricky problems here is that many people are moving to mobile devices, and so you would just see a vastly disproportionately high number of iOS and Android users and the odd Windows phone user, lol, and then an Ubuntu phone user, and then, like, desktop users, like completely different demographics. So you need to find sites that people visit on a computer. Like, anyway, I'm sure we'll get.
Oh, are you checking bias?
Well, I happen to be somehow to be a moderator on the Ubuntu Reddit, but it actually doesn't make sense to check there for Linux stats. That should probably be clear.
But it does give you stats, does it?
It does give you stats, but I don't see anything regarding the OS.
Huh?
Not even views browser names, like just that. Okay. Views per month.
Ah, well, it was worth a try. So, should we move on?
Yeah.
Final topic. Max has opinions.
I didn't put that in there. Just somebody knows that I have opinions.
So, we've already consumed it? About an hour of everyone's time. So, we need to truncate your opinions
Have you talked about it in the Ubuntu podcast yet?
Have we? So, well, the topic for Max's opinions is a free software phone, Librem 5.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about it on the Ubuntu podcast. We did talk about it on Linux Unplugged.
Right.
Okay. So I guess the Librem 5, just to expand as quickly as possible, is a new campaign by the Librem guys, which have done these Librem laptops before, the Librem 15 and 13, these laptops that are running 100% free software. They didn't when they shipped, but they are running now. So I guess they are pretty Stallman-esque about their whole ideals. And they made this new campaign with this phone. To be honest, the phone isn't really in a prototype state. It's just really a suggestion of we will do this phone if you give us 1.5 million
bucks. Unkind people might say it's vaporware.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't know of any people that would say.
And they want how much money to do 1.5
million.
Okay.
That's the crowdfunding goal right now, which in my opinion is pretty low. I mean, which was the Ubuntu Edge campaign?
Edge was 30 million, yes. And they got 12.
So, I mean, that 12 million would be a number you could work with. In creating a
it's
new
phone.
It's
a ludicrously high amount of money.
Like, yeah. But I mean, for creating new devices and shipping them to people, it's pretty hard. And
so I think the device that they're planning on using will be an ODM SKU. So it's not like they have
to. So for normal people, what does that mean?
That means that this device already exists and is being manufactured by somebody, and that they would maybe have to make some modifications and customizations to it. But the chassis and the components exist.
That depends. They don't have been so transparent about it. It's planned that they are using their own processor, their own GPU. And
when you say their own processor?
No, they're
just not making.
No, they're not.
Right.
No, they're buying an XP processor, an IMX 6, I guess, or the R8 if it comes out. That's a scratch call. And they are planning on using a Vivanti GPU. That's a GPU for mobile devices that can run free software drivers. And and technically it sounds nice that they at least have been honest about what they're gonna put in this device, but. The rest of the details aren't really that promising because they haven't really finished the planning yet or have finished anything at all.
Well, in fact, they go as far to say in their FAQ that whatever you fund, there's no guarantee that you will get anything that they're describing today. Everything could change.
Yeah.
So that you really don't know what you're funding other than an aspiration to create a device that has certain goals and objectives in terms of privacy and those natures, but around the technology itself, that's very flexible.
Yeah, and I mean the main target and the main promise is to separate the GSM module from the CPU, which is a problem in the freedom dimension if you care about it, because well, the GSM modules can normally read the whole memory of the main CPU, so everything you do on your phone is pretty much could be sucked out by any parties that want to do that. But I guess it also is important for porting and for opening up devices if you do this.
So I think we've covered the basics of what the thing is.
And the problem with the campaign I wanted to get into is there are many problems. But
Limit yourself to five problems.
No. I don't even need five. I mean, the project would be a nice thing. And I am I'm really thinking about backing it still, despite all the troubles I see. But if you just scroll down their campaign site, which they host themselves, not really on Kickstarter or something, and you have to pay with your credit card, you notice a lot of, as you said, wiperware. It's just it's for everyone. It's for parents. It's for developers. It's for like the Ubuntu phone promise.
Right, but when you're marketing something on a crowdfunding campaign, you have to market to everyone.
Yeah, they have to market to everyone. But I mean, they are trying to sell a privacy focused, probably really complicated idea to people. And they are just promising way too much. They are promising it's going to keep you secure. It's going to keep you from prying eyes. It's going to keep you safe at night. I don't know. But
if they did deliver the promise that the architecture that they've talked about, that could happen.
The problem
right?
is they're not just building a phone. They also are promising to build an OS for it.
Right.
As you may have noticed.
I would imagine they're not building it from...
No, they just want to fork their Pure OS thing that they already have done on their laptops, which means like double maintenance and maintaining two operating systems. And I guess they already have problems maintaining their Pure OS thing. If you look on their bug tracker, don't look on their bug tracker. Please don't.
So, Rudy, what was it you said just then?
I was saying something about OpenMoCo, which they tried to promise only for developers.
Yeah,
which was a decent target, I think.
That would be more honest if you think about it. But also, they have released this timetable of what they're planning. And if you look at it, it's just amazing how they think they're going to do pull all this through. They say we are going to be done with the device and manufacturing it and shipping it within about a year. And then we're going to develop the OS. So that means... They really think that they can pull off manufacturing, budgeting, picking the hardware, getting in contact with the manufacturers, all that stuff in 1 year.
I'm getting a feeling that you don't think they can fulfill the promises that they've got on their website.
I guess that's the feeling I want to give.
Right.
But it's still, the idea is really, really important, to the world, because there isn't anything like it out there.
So if you were to back this today... And it was successful.
Yeah.
The earliest you could expect to get a device is January 2019, which is a year and a half from now, more or less.
What they say.
And that's a device that they're planning today that you get in a year and a half. Yeah. And what advances are going to be made in mobile technology between now and 18 months?
I think the tricky thing there is, like, with these freedom devices, often you lag behind. You've got companies with billion-dollar budgets, multi-billion-dollar budgets, like Samsung and Apple and Google and Huawei and all of these, who can push the edge, push the boundary. Mm-hmm. But then at the back end, you've always got like the cheapo phones that still carry on for years afterwards.
Yeah.
And not everyone wants the bleeding edge, waterproof, made from butterflies like phone. They want a functional device. And if they want a functional device with added freedom, with the Richard Stallman stamp of approval on their phone, then they would. I don't think those people would expect to have the made from sapphires.
You've been referring to this as a phone and a functional device, but the key feature that this doesn't actually have is that it doesn't actually work as a phone.
Right.
So it's basically a small tablet.
But the vast majority of people, in my opinion, like hand wavy, not based on any scientific data, so don't blame me, people don't use their phones as a phone. People use it as an internet-connected portal to, like, their social life and booking tickets and buying, you know, shopping and stuff. Nobody uses it as a phone. So the whole will make it so that it's a super secure phone platform. Couldn't care less, because I don't make phone calls. So why would I care? Like, you know, yeah, plus, I mean, if I was going to make a phone call, I might make a phone call from home or from some other device. That would be perfectly fine. Or just buy a Nokia-like brick for making phone calls that I could carry around with a 20-day battery life and carry that for, you know, showing off to my freedom-loving friends.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, the whole Ubuntu phone thing that we experienced over the last 2 years was pretty much an example in that people are willing to spend money on this and are ready to limit themselves in some ways to really, well, have this.
But maybe thing. Not enough people are willing to do it. Some people are willing to spend money on a BQE4, E5, MX4, Pro 5. Are there enough people who are willing to sacrifice Snapchat and WhatsApp for
the thing is, in my opinion, you wouldn't have to sacrifice it if you just get at this problem differently. Because what they are building is just a brick, and this brick can also run Android if you are willing to, and this can also run Google Android if you're willing to, and they could just sell it as is and just say it's a better Android phone because it can run upstream Linux kernels, it can run it hasn't the GSM CPU problem.
But selling a better Android phone, I can think of three companies who've tried to do that and have failed.
Of course.
People don't want a better Android phone.
They want a more security, more long-term usable Android phone, because people do want Android, and people are concerned about some people are concerned about a obscure threat to their privacy and stuff. Okay. And I guess these people would be pretty much fine with just buying a phone that promised them to be a little bit better in this regard, and also be updated for, well, as long as the Linux kernel exists. Mm. And I mean,
so
would be pretty nice.
I think what will be interesting is at the next UbuCon, in roughly a year, we revisit this topic and see where things are. Yeah.
So what's your prediction, like, Marius, what's your prediction? If we spin forward a year from now, what's your prediction for this?
I've checked their page and they're like roughly at 15% of the founding goal of $1,500,000. I think they will fail at like 30%.
They'll get to about 30%. So you reckon in a year's time they'll have given up, because...
Maybe not given up, but definitely the campaign will have failed.
Right, okay.
But I guess somebody is going to come along and just do the right thing, because it has been tried so many times.
Let's see what other... Like, so you reckon 30% and fail, or maybe a success. Jago, what do you think?
50%.
You reckon they'll get to 50%. So we're getting this recorded, so we can come back. Right, you reckon they'll get to 50%. Martin, what do you reckon? Oh, what will they do when they get to 50%? In a year's time, will we look back on this and say, well, it failed? Like people look back on Edge and say, oh, well, it failed.
It's almost, I think it's going to be the same as Edge.
Right.
Because it failed, okay.
Okay.
So let's go for other solutions, but not this one.
Okay.
I reckon this campaign will get to about 25% and fail, and I think also Purism will go out of business, because we've seen companies to have like three or four Kickstarter type funding rounds ultimately fail. If you have to keep trying to bootstrap a business by going back to crowdfunding, you haven't bootstrapped a company that's sustainable. So I think this, if it's not successful, will actually be the end of Purism or Librem.
It's an interesting point of view. I've seen some companies who have done kickstart multiple projects and been successful. So it'd be interesting to see if they manage that. Rudy, what do you think? If we come to UbuCon Paris next year...
Yeah. No.
Thought I had him there.
UbuCon Europe, you mean.
Okay, so UbuCon Europe. We're coming in a year's time, so towards the end of 2018, and the promised release date is January 2019. Where do you think we are on that roadmap?
I have sincerely no idea, but... Just for the fun, I will bring my OpenMoku.
Well, wave that around and go, look, I've still got this, and it still works.
Still works.
Right. So, interesting. So, I would probably say, I think they will, we've talked about this before, and I think they will extend the deadline and push back the delivery date and change the specs and things will keep changing over the course of the next year, and they'll keep getting news cycles, and people will keep talking about it because things are changing and they've made new decisions, and oh, we're going to have a bigger display, or oh, we've got some added freedom that we're going to throw in there, or you know,
do you think they'll actually be any closer a year from now than they are today?
That's the end point, is no, I don't think they'll actually be any closer to having a working device in January 2019. So all round, that seems like Max, we love the idea, but we all think it will ultimately fail.
Yeah, I too.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad we talked about that.
When it will fail, but my point was probably because this has been tried so many times right now, someone in the end will probably do the right thing and succeed. Okay. Because there's a market for it, in my opinion.
Yeah, you've actually written down what we said. Oh my gosh. So, is that everything we wanted to cover, I think?
Yeah.
Awesome. So, thank you, Rudy, for organizing and helping to organize. Yes, go on.
By the way, I got a little thing for you.
Oh, God.
Oh, damn. Plug. It's not tattoos.
Okay.
It's just a tiny Ubuntu.
Oh, thank you. We've got little key rings.
Yeah.
For the audio people who can't see.
Yeah, for the information, those key rings, which is a Ubuntu logo, circle offering, are made by 3D printers by the Fab Lab, a kind of hackerspace from where we do the Ubucon Europe.
Yeah, that's something we didn't mention earlier, is this venue is amazing, mm-hmm. and there's so much other cool stuff going on here. We could wander off away from the Ubucon and see, you know, the history of flight stuff upstairs, and there's all the makerspace in the Ubucon area. So, yeah, it's a pretty awesome place. So thank you for bringing us all here to Paris.
Thank you for coming.
No. Thank you also to Marius and Max for joining us, and Tiago for joining us from the Portuguese podcast. I think that's it.
And so, thank you, Alan, for hosting it.
Yeah. And thanks to our massive audience. Right. Coffee, anyone?
Yeah, definitely.